Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hello and welcome to The Gridiron Show. This is where it actually begins if you're watching the online version and seeing me being muted. That didn't happen. I'm not going to say fake news because I feel like an idiot. But live from a conference room in Slough by the looks of it, with the lighting I've got today. I'm Will Gavin. Alongside me, features editor for Gridiron Magazine, Simon Clancy, and my main man on The Gridiron Show, Ollie Hunter. Gents, how are we after week 7?
Good, thanks, mate. That sounded really thrilling, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, Ollie is now muted himself somehow.
I don't know how that's happened. I think Michael did it. Yeah, I'm groovy. I was flipping the old Rogers, but I think ever since...
Well, isn't the Rogers now just lying face down on the floor and not moving?
Having a little cry. Is the Rogers now... The just petulant sigh at yet another wide receiver dropping a ball. But I will go to Rogers very quickly. Maybe this will be hopefully the last time we speak about him. But he's actually throwing the ball into the dirt quite a lot as well. So I know I don't think it's all on the wide receivers. But yeah, I'm good. I'm resigned. I don't know how you feel about your team losing after they've just made a massive draft pick, but I'm a massive trade. But I'm quite resigned to the fact that Green Bay are rubbish and until further notice. So it's kind of like, oh well, it is. It's quite funny. I find it funny.
I want to talk more about Rodgers because in the show today, I think we should talk about the aging quarterbacks who are struggling this year. We will look back on Monday Night Football as the New England Patriots get decimated by the Chicago Bears as well. We'll look forward to Thursday night as well. Plenty of us for us to get into. I will just answer your question very quickly because you asked me, and we don't want to make this all about our teams every week. We want to try and avoid that, but it was a horrible loss on Sunday for the 49ers. It was the fact that the defense, who had played so well up until this point, just absolutely fell apart, and Andy Reid completely schooled D'Amico Ryans is a problem. I think they rushed a lot of people back too quickly from injuries. We've got the Rams coming up, and then a bye week, and then a second half of the season, which looks schedule-wise a lot easier. And last year we were 3-5 and ended up in the NFC Championship game. So I am not losing complete hope, but it was a tough loss to take.
Okay.
And yeah, we'll see what next week looks like against the Rams. I'm excited for CMC to have the full playbook and the full run and have people properly back healthy and all of that stuff. I did Sunday Night Football on Sunday as well on old TalkSport 2. And for about a quarter and a half, the Dolphins were absolutely sensational. And then it was tough getting over the line. They did it, which is the main thing. But yeah, I was kind of messaging with Simon throughout, and it was a bit of a roller coaster from the Dolphins' perspective.
A little bit. I kind of felt like there was a bit of rust. I thought Mike McDaniel got out. I thought it was Mike McDaniel's first bad game as a coach. I thought he got out-coached. I thought the Steelers made some great adjustments, certainly shutting down the middle of the field. But I just thought, some time management issues, that obviously not going, not kicking the field goal to put it 19-10 and sort of leaving it sort of hanging on at the end was a little bit unfortunate. But the quarterback is back. Tron Armstead was back playing well. Miami came into the game with 4 healthy active tight ends ready to go in that game and 3 active corners. And essentially, Justin Bethel played 61 snaps in four seasons on defense. He played 59 snaps as a starting outside corner for the Dolphins on Sunday night. So,
and played really well,
Got an interception, 7 or 8 tackles. So they got really big performances from kind of, they literally started 2 special teams guys. Bethlen, Noah Igbinoghene, corner opposite Xavien Howard. So they came up big when they needed to. It kind of felt like after a quarter and a half and the offense was just absolutely singing. There was a few missed opportunities, a couple of really inexplicable drops. So Tyreek Hill makes a drop, or sort of pauses his route halfway through in the second quarter. And he's still running now if he doesn't stop, inexplicably seems to stop his route. Tua missed a few throws after looking really good early on. But it was good to have him back. The energy looked good in the stadium, felt good. The offense is just completely, the team is just completely different when he's there. So yeah, good to get back on track. And then Detroit this week on that fast turf with that speedy offense. So fingers crossed.
Now, there's going to be plenty, like I said, for us to get into this week. We'll talk quarterbacks. The Colts make a change. Should the Patriots be looking to do the same with their second-year quarterback in Mac Jones? We'll talk about those aging guys as well. I also want to talk about the New York teams and look forward to London as well. But let's start off with that Monday Night Football game, a game which I kind of assumed we wouldn't end up hugely covering this week. It wasn't the most exciting game on paper, but I mean, Matthew Sherry, you know, Gridiron founder, said himself that he thought that was the worst Patriots performance that he's watched in the Bill Belichick era. He is a man who, it must be says, is
he's the king
susceptible
of hyperbole.
Susceptible to hyperbole.
Is he?
Is but, he? But it wasn't good, was it, Simon?
Oh, it was horrendous. I thought they were awful. I thought, apart from that period when Bailey Zappe came on and, you know, he had the touchdown drive, the touchdown to Myers, the throw to Devontae Parker, and then obviously Ramondre Stevenson scored to put them up 14-10. There was some energy in that building. But apart from that, and I don't understand the decision. I was reading one of the Boston newspapers this morning, and they were talking about how none of the players seemed to understand the decision in terms of taking Mac Jones out of the game and putting Bailey Zappe in, Ramondre Stevenson, Jacoby Myers specifically. We're talking about how that had certainly never been sort of parlayed to them, that information. Feels like at the moment, Mac Jones had a very spotty year this year. And it feels as though, I mean, I put in our WhatsApp group this morning that if you have two quarterbacks and you don't really have one at all, it's going to be a really interesting decision. I saw Bill Belichick's press conference this morning where he did the classic Bill Belichick of not answering anything. He said that all the questions were hypothetical in terms of whether Mac Jones was injured, whether Mac Jones would be playing next week, whether Bailey Zappe was the starter. But the Zappe bubble burst and he went from happy Zappe to crappy Zappe in about two quarters. No worries. I just thought of that literally as I was talking.
I enjoyed it greatly.
No worries, buddy. No worries. He can use that. I mean, he was late on some throws. He was unfortunate or fortunate not to Kyler Gordon just to sort of run out of gas on that interception. But I just thought just overall, they just looked slow. They couldn't get the running game going, the much vaunted running game going. The offensive line struggled. And defensively, apart from Matthew Judon, they just looked really sort of off the pace, Ollie. I don't know what you thought, but I just thought all over the field. And you know, I saw the Bears the previous week in that game against the Commanders, and they were terrible. I mean, terrible. But Justin Fields actually looked fairly efficient, certainly sort of running the ball.
On that point, it felt like against Washington, they tried to play him very much in the pocket. They tried to force him to throw the ball. I don't know if that was a slight design because of Washington's defensive line does offer a little bit of a challenge for them potentially. But it did feel like last night, I will get more on to the Patriots quarterback situation, but it did feel like last night we saw Justin Fields being allowed to do what Justin Fields do well, which is try and move the ball with his legs.
I think that's what they've got to do with him moving forward. So that was stat line after the Commanders game that I think he'd thrown 112 passes this season, which is the lowest since the Patriots of 1982, which I thought was astonishing. But Ollie, they were just getting him the ball in much more of those sort of designed runs situations. And when you've got that sort of two-headed running back combination of Montgomery and Khalil Herbert, it actually works. The blocking up front was pretty good. I thought Cole Kmet blocked really well. And then he took his chance in the short and intermediate areas. He still really throws an ugly deep ball, really can't, you know, nail a deep throw. But I thought in terms of the design runs, Ollie, Luke Getsy did a really nice job last night.
Who knew? Get your quarterback and your team doing things that they're good at. There's an awful lot of teams in the NFL that could maybe use that very, very simple bit of logic, couldn't they? Look, the Bears look good But I think it's more an indictment on how bad the Patriots were on defense. I mean, people were talking about the Patriots defense. Matthew Sherry is one of them before this game, that they're one of the best defenses in the league. And they just looked slow. They looked, as you said, full of indecision. And I think the whole quarterback issue probably
controversy.
It probably spread like wildfire throughout that, and leaving indecision and just kind of like, what is earth going on? It probably spread across the whole bench, across the whole team, and the defense wasn't immune to that. So, I mean, the Patriots looking slow, not looking great, weird decisions, controversy, and then the Bears capitalized on it by doing what they should have been doing from the very first game of the season, which is getting your running quarterback run, leaning on that run with your pretty good running backs. I mean, football shouldn't be a difficult game. It's a simple one. And the Bears executed that yesterday.
On that point of Bears efficiency as well, they went 11 of 18 on third down last night, which is a decent rate for a below average team. But it's worth mentioning that 10 of those 11 third down conversions were either fields running or fields passing for the third down. So, you know, that is a quarterback doing the job he's meant to be doing, which is like, and like you say, actually having a team execute what they do well and using that as part of the game plan. We did have a question come in from Sam on Twitter, who asked a very simple question, and it could lead us on nicely to discussing the New York teams. But the question of who do you start for New England next week? Assuming both are healthy, let's say that Mac Jones is healthy and good to go. You're going up against the Jets next week, who are on a 4-0 run. You're going to New York to face them. They're way out in front of you in the division. You're sat at 3-4. They're sat at, 5-2 now? Honestly, based on what I've seen over the past, if I'm just taking the sample size of the past 4 weeks, probably starting Bailey Zappi.
I don't think I am. I think if you look at the sample, I don't think you can look at the sample size just over a few weeks. I think you have to look at Bailey Zappi, especially in this game. It's a different thing what I would do and what Bill Belichick will do, but you have to.
It's a hypothetical, so we wouldn't answer the question anyway.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think you have to start Mac Jones, and as much as I don't think he's a long term answer and may go down the, I don't know, Sam Darnold route maybe in the long term or whatever, I think he's shown more in a bigger sample size than Bailey Zappi has in a smaller sample size. I think you have to play him, and with the rest of the team finding the whole decision to bench him weird, I think that tells you an awful lot about how the team feel about Mac Jones as well. And I think that plays a huge part in any decision that Bill Belichick should be making.
Yeah, I'd start Mac Jones as well. I mean, I think he's the better player. Although I don't, I mean, I never really bought into the hype last year. And I think, like I said, I thought he's been inconsistent this year. And look, I think in a way the Patriots were hindered by the fact that the crowd made such a reaction when Zappi came in, because it felt like a real indictment on a quarterback who hasn't been awful. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, it wasn't like they were benching, you know, some absolute bum to bring in the rookie who's had a couple of wins. And actually, if you strip it back and look at what Zappi did in that game, yeah, his first throw was a little flare out to Ramondre Stevenson, who was wide open. He then sort of underthrows and throws behind a wide open Jacoby Myers, and Myers makes an amazing catch. And then he hits Devontae Parker in essentially a jump ball situation down the sideline. So he did have one throw where he split the needle to Parker in the second half. But I mean, let's be clear, he wasn't. You know, this is not kind of vintage 2012 Aaron Rodgers that we were talking about. In terms of Zappi. So I think you have to go back to Jones. And I didn't think Jones played badly before he got hooked. I mean, I know they were down, you know, two scores, but even so, it felt like a very odd decision after three drives just to pull him out of the game. But I would start Mac Jones against the Jets. I'm just not sure that you can throw the rookie into that, especially with the way that Robert Saleh's defense are playing.
Before we get into the quarterback controversy of its own in Indianapolis, let's just talk about the team that they do face this coming Sunday in the New York Jets. I mean, the first thing to say is they have just gone 4-0. And on a 4-0 run, and for the second straight week, certainly, they weren't moving the ball through the air particularly well with Zach Wilson under center. It was a huge amount about their run game, and it was a case of getting it done. Not looking pretty, but getting it done. And yet, Breece Hall, after his 62-yard touchdown off the left end, which was very impressive, on the following a couple of drives later, he ends up going down. It ends up being an ACL tear. He's done for the season. It's now been confirmed that Elijah Vera Tucker will also miss the rest of the season after going down with an injury. So the question is now, they go and trade for James Robinson. They've looked really good on the ground. Robinson and Carter is their backfield right now. Can they continue that run against a Patriots team who have just come off their worst performance in eons? Or is this finally the moment where that kind of Jets doing just enough to win comes a little bit off the rails? I have to say, I have been genuinely impressed with the Jets. I think coaching-wise, they've done a really good job of scheming up what they've needed to scheme up. Defensively, Sauce Gardner looks absolutely sensational. And he's not the only one on that side of the ball who's been impressive. Yeah, Robert Salah is doing a good job right now in New York. I don't know, maybe it's just historically, Ollie, but I just refuse to believe that the Jets can continue a run like this.
Well, it's difficult as well when they've got Zach Wilson under center, because if you look at some of the throws that he's making, and Simon will probably agree with me on this, some of the footwork and balance is absolutely all over the place. He's regressed hugely in where his feet are, how he plants them, where the forces are moving and where they're going through. And he looks absolutely all over the place throwing the ball. That means they got to lean on the run. They're getting a new running back who has to learn the playbook. All right, he's got a week to do it, but Michael Carter hasn't set the world alight so far this season. And then Bill Belichick will see, okay, so the quarterback is useless. All I have to do is stuff the box. The quarterback's not going to run that much because he's suffered from injuries recently. So it's two running backs, one of which is new. Stuff the box, shut down the offense. On the Jets side, on the other side of the ball, they do have a really good defense, as you said, and going up against a New England defense, which hasn't been firing. It's a tricky one, but I don't know what you think, Simon, about...
Don't worry, Fred.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what you think, Simon, about the matchup itself and the absolute regression of the quarterback in Zach Wilson.
Well, you talk about regression, Ollie, but I'm not sure he ever got far enough to even regress. I say that with a completely straight face. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's going to be rough going, I think, for the rest of this season. I think he is one of the worst quarterbacks I've seen over this 2-year period in terms of year and a half period. I don't think he is very good. I think losing Breece Hall is huge. I think losing Vera Tucker is huge. And look, Jets fans aren't going to like me for this. I do look at their schedule and think, who have you beaten of any note? Okay, you beat the Broncos and you beat the Browns essentially on... I mean, that game, how the Browns lost that is inexplicable. And the Browns should have won that. And we know what happened at the end of that game. They beat a bad Steelers team by 4. They beat what's clearly a bad Packers team. They beat a very bad Broncos team, certainly offensively, with Brett Rippon at quarterback. And they beat a Dolphins team who were playing their third string rookie quarterback, a 7th-round pick out of Kansas State. And actually, with 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, the Dolphins had a field goal to take a 20-19 lead. Or 2017 league. No, 2019 league. So I just do wonder who they've beaten. And it's great that they're 5-2. I think it's great for football that the Jets are and indeed the Giants. But I just think when they come up against they've got this 3-game run now, Patriots, Bills, Patriots. And I think even if you split the games against the Patriots, which I don't think they'll do, I think the Patriots will probably win both of them. They're going to get spanked by the Bills. And then all of a sudden you're 5-5 and you find yourself in a very difficult kind of then 3-game stretch where you're playing the Bears, who have been a bit more competitive, then the Vikings, and then back to Buffalo again. So I just do wonder and worry a bit about who they've beaten and what they can be going forwards, especially when they've lost their stud running back.
I think that's part of the key to what you've said there. And look, why I am impressed by the Jets and why I mentioned the coaching is because they keep finding a way to win those games. They do keep finding a way to win games that are tight games. And you could accuse the Jets in the past of they would have lost at least two, if not all four of those games in the past. So that's something, an area in which I think you have to praise them to an extent. But it's an even bigger issue on in the other half of, I was going to say, New York, New Jersey, really, because the Giants are 6-1 after this 23-17 win over Jacksonville. And it is the most, like, it's a historic 6-1 in terms of just how close they are to being 1-6, essentially. They're just the third team in NFL history to register 6 wins by a final score of 8 or fewer points within this period of the season. Only the 2000 Minnesota Vikings and 88 Saints did it. They're also only the third team ever to win at least 5 games when trailing in the second half of every game this season. Only the 2015 Falcons and the 07 Tennessee Titans. They're the first team to win at least 4 games when trailing in the fourth quarter this deep into the season in the last 8 years. Like, every time you look at it, they are historically a team that should almost not have this record, and yet the lights keep going on off around me. If anyone's watching the video version, it keeps getting just gradually darker and darker in this room. I don't know what's going on. They are historically a team who probably shouldn't be 6-1, and yet with Brian Daboll, with the fight they've shown on the defensive side, with Daniel Jones picking up those third downs with his leg, with making, you know, great offensive plays with absolutely nobody available to him at receiver, all that stuff gets me kind of like excited that, okay, yeah, maybe they're 6-1 and it's ridiculous they're 6-1, but aren't they a fun 6-1, and don't I kind of believe every week they'll be in every game?
Yeah, I love what the Giants are doing. I just conceivably think that it's not even close to the realms of possibility. I think that the Jets are not lucky, because that's unfair, but, you know, they could easily be 1-6. Yeah. I mean, the Browns defeat the Steelers when they were down by what, 10 or 12 with about 3 minutes to go. I don't think a Tua-led Dolphins are losing to the Jets. You know, considering that they were 19-17 up 9 minutes ago in the fourth quarter. And even as bad as Russell Wilson's played, I'm not sure the Broncos and Russell Wilson are losing to the Jets there. So, and as for the Giants, what I love about football, one of the things I love is that you just get people in perfect situations. Mike McDaniel's a great example with Tua. I think Brian Daboll with Daniel Jones is another one. I think Daniel Jones is just playing really good football. He seems like a really good guy, much maligned, obviously really difficult to go into that New York area and be a success. And if you don't, you get absolutely hammered by the press and stuff. But it's great to see him bouncing back. Saquon's playing really well. Andrew Thomas is dominant as a left tackle. You know, the defense is playing well. Kayvon Thibodeau's playing well. I think they're doing just some crazy stuff in terms of schematic wise on defense. And I think you know, that's a sexy 6-1, and kind of in a way it deserves 6-1. They're just, you know, they are eking out some games that maybe they should lose. And I suppose I've kind of been a bit unfair with the Jets because they're doing the same thing. But I like the Giants. I love the story. I think it's great they're competitive in the NFC East, and it'll be a great game in a couple of weeks' time when they take on the Eagles. That's going to be a hell of a battle.
I just love how gritty they are. How, you know, coming back from behind and eking out these wins, and you can really tell that at the beginning of the season, where everyone was ruling them out and saying perhaps they're the worst team in football, they've turned that on its head. They're not the worst team in football. And as you said, Simon, it's a perfect storm of the right place at the right time. Daboll, who did wonders in helping to turn helping to turn Josh Allen into what he is at Buffalo, is doing the same now with Daniel Jones. So, I mean, probably not with the same end results, but he's made him quite clearly a better player. And Daniel Jones is making far better decisions. Before, he was holding on to the ball and there were sack fumbles. Now he's just throwing it away, getting it away. It's just better decisions. He's also using his legs really well. 107 yards last weekend. So, it's fun seeing a team like that do well.
I think if you look at the schedule, Will, just to jump in, of their next 7 games, you'd say they were favourites in 5 of them, right? If they win 5 of those 7, they're in the playoffs. They're 11-3 if they lose. You know, they got the Seahawks, they play the Texans they should beat, the Lions they should beat, the Cowboys kind of a picking game, they should beat the Commanders. Then they play the Eagles for the first time and then play the Commanders again. And you kind of think, Of those seven, you'd favour them in probably five: Seahawks, Giants, Lions, Commanders, right? I mean, they're fortunate they don't play the Eagles until 5 weeks to go in the final week. And I think that game in the final week will probably be redundant because both teams will probably be in the playoffs at that point if they stay healthy. So it's set up perfectly for the Giants to really make a run in the playoffs or run through the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed. Let's just reflect on the other big bit of quarterback news was after the Colts went down 19-10 to the Tennessee Titans this week. Initially, the word shoulder injury were used, and then it was very much clarified by Frank Reich that this was a benching that was happening because of form and it was going to be happening for the rest of the season. But Matt Ryan, Simon Clancy, is no longer the starting quarterback in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and it's multi-layered, isn't it? I mean, the inability of the Colts to find a quarterback, I think, is indicative of aging quarterbacks. And we'll get on to guys like, you know, certainly Tom Brady and the struggles that Aaron Rodgers is having as well at the moment. Matt Ryan looks absolutely goosed. And I also think it's just indicative of really bad play around the league, just generally. You know, and now so they bring in Sam Ellinger, who, you know, people, if you follow college football, would have seen at Texas. You know, he is kind of the ultimate, he is the gamer's gamer. Do you know what I mean? I mean, and we said it, I think, on this podcast 2 or 3 weeks ago that it felt like a situation where Frank Reich and Chris Ballard had to put Ellinger in at some point. You kind of have to know what you've got with this guy. They really like him. But do they like him enough to ignore a CJ Stroud or a Will Levis or a Bryce Young next season? And you've got to kind of see what, because Matt Ryan, you've seen Matt Ryan isn't going to get suddenly magically any better. Dan Orlovsky was defending him on Twitter this morning, which I didn't quite understand. And Dan's usually very fair over quarterbacks. But I just think the arm is gone. I just think the fumbling, you know, it takes you back to Dave Craig at Seattle. I mean, he puts the ball on the floor so often. I just think he's absolutely shot. And you've just got to ride or die with Ellinger and see what you've got with him. And, you know, he'll certainly bring a bit of a bit of that sort of gamer mentality to the field. He's a dual threat, can run for first downs. They're not helped by the fact their offensive line has gone from a sort of top five unit to a bottom five unit. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what sort of juice Ellinger brings to the table at the weekend.
Just, Lolly, let me ask you this quickly. Sam Ellinger, very much, you know, it's a roar, it's a prospect. You don't know what you've got there, and it's a chance to see what you've got there. You do have a Super Bowl winning quarterback in the building as well in Nick Foles, who we know can operate an offense to a maybe not quite league standard level, but with the running game they've potentially got, with the offensive line payments they've made, with when the defense eventually gets back and fully healthy, they're still missing top guys at two levels, then we are suddenly talking, you know, you feel like Nick Foles could do enough in that offense. So I'm kind of surprised that they've gone with Ellinger. Like, that's the direction they've gone in.
It's a really weird one, isn't it? Because he was inactive at the weekend, Nick Foles. So, he's not even the backup, or he wasn't even the backup over the last week to Matt Ryan. It makes you wonder whether this kind of leaning away from Nick Foles towards Ellinger has been in the crosshairs for the Colts and Frank Reich for a while. What's going on? Why isn't Nick Foles propelled himself into that position? So that's questions that need to be answered or even asked over the next couple of weeks of Nick Foles and of that organization. Why hasn't he? It must be something in training. Must be something in practice.
There's a quid pro quo in that, isn't there? In that you're not riding with either of these quarterbacks, Ryan or Foles, for the long term. They're not your long-term quarterback. You know, Nick Foles, there's enough evidence, save for that amazing playoff run and then the amazing playoff run the following season, that he's ever really going to be the guy. And, you know, the older he gets, the less chance that's going to happen. Matt Ryan, that's clearly not going to happen, right? So whilst they're 3-3 and second in the division, you kind of feel like, okay, a game manager like Foles might get you a very flawed team. You could win the division, okay? And then you get battered in the first round of the playoffs. The quid pro quo on that is that maybe you just start this kid, Ellinger, and you feel like, okay, the sample size is going to be big enough for us to get to the end of the season to think, well, you know what? We've got something here. You know, we get Jonathan Taylor healthy. We invest in the offensive line and free agency in the draft. And maybe we build a little bit of something around this with the best running game, best running back in the league, play good defense. I think we've got to make a decision on a guy that they clearly like in-house. And Nick Foles is not going to be the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts next season. And that, to me, is what it comes down to.
My only problem is you're still 3-3-1. You're only technically one game back in the division. Sure. Really two, because the Titans have the head-to-head over them. So you need to get out in front of them. You can't just pull level with them. But that's the only thing for me, is you're still very much in contention at the moment. And Nick Foles has taken a contender to and won a Super Bowl with them before. I don't think the Colts are as good as that Eagles team. They don't have that defensive line. They don't have that, you know, secondary. They don't have those weapons. There's so much they don't have. They have some of the same coaching, but the fact is that it's not the same situation. But that's why I was kind of slightly surprised. And I think there'll be some Colts fans who likely feel the same, unless they want to tank and go and get one of those top three quarterbacks, or go in what, the top five picks next year, probably, most likely. So it's going to take a bad record to get there.
At the moment, they're not getting one of those three quarterbacks. So that's
close.
You need to find out. You develop this guy for a couple of years. You need to find out what you've got with him. Otherwise, what's the point in spending all that time, effort, coaching, et cetera, developing it? If by the end of the season, you know, you've only won three more games and he's crashed and burned, then at least you have the answer to your question. And then you can look at Hendon Hooker and, you know, whether he, you know, gets into the first round or in the second round, or what happens with Tyler Van Dyke in Miami, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, or if you lose enough games, then you're going to put yourself in the picture of a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud or a Will Levis, because, you know, they've only won three games at this point and there's still a long way to go. So we shall see. But it'll be, I kind of feel like you've just got to know what you've got. You can't get rid of Sam Ellinger. You can't trade him or cut him or put him on the practice squad, leave him unprotected, and then get picked up by another team. And then he goes and starts and turns into a really good player, because you're just going to shoot yourself in the foot. You're just shooting yourself in the foot. You've got to find out what you've got.
That's a Taysom Hill example, isn't it? With the Green Bay Packers, they showed a little bit of what he had in a preseason. They didn't pick him up. They let him float around, and then the Saints pick him up, and look how important he's been for them, and how good he's been for them. You can't let these guys rest there without testing them out.
For those of us reveling in the Patriots being 3-4 at this stage in the season and not looking very good this week, let's continue to revel in the fact that Tom Brady hasn't been under 500 this late into a season since 2002. Is currently sat 3-4, has to face the Ravens on Thursday Night Football and put up 3 points against one of the worst teams in the NFL, who won 21-3 while starting PJ Walker under center and with no actual head coach. That Panthers result, as much as the Bucs have been bad this year compared with both expectation and what they've achieved in the first two seasons with Brady there, there's bad, and then there's losing in that fashion to a divisional rival who many people thought might be picking first overall this year. That is, it was as astonishing of a performance as I can remember in recent times.
I just don't get it. It was really weird. It's like Brady looks disinterested. It just doesn't look like he's interested. All right, it could have been very, very different had Mike Evans not inexplicably dropped that ball when he was running towards the end zone, juggling it. It could have been very different, but it wasn't. It's not very different to that, because I think they've completely lost the plot. It's so weird. The defense is gone. This vaunted stellar defense that everyone was talking about is allowed a backup quarterback, maybe a third stringer, and two backup running backs just dominate them, and then the defense just rode that offensive vibe. It's so weird. I don't know what you think and what your thoughts on Brady are, Simon. Whether the issues with his personal life are creeping in, the fact that he didn't do much of preseason or practice preseason either. So I don't know what's going on.
I think, look, the thing that's always been so amazing about Tom Brady is the level of commitment, the everything that he's put into it from, you know, from year dot right the way through until when he joined Tampa and was beat up in the park with these guys and all that sort of stuff. He has always been 110% all in, and now he feels like a part-time player. Whatever's happening in his personal life, and I totally understand that, but it's clearly affecting his on-field game. You know, he's taking time off through the week. He took that 10-12-day period off in training camp. That's just not what Tom Brady does, and I don't think at 44, 45, 46 years old, you can continue to play just physically at that level without dropping off, but also without the same commitment to your art. You can't do it. It's just impossible. You look at these kids, you look at guys, you're going up against guys like Micah Parsons and Sauce Gardner and players like that that are coming into the league that are athletic as hell, that can run like the wind. I just don't think you can do it unless you're absolutely all in. Now, I will flip that by saying, look, if Mike Evans doesn't drop that absolute dolly, then we're not even talking about this kind of situation. No, he hasn't played particularly well, Brady, this season, but I think that's a very different game on Sunday. But he just looks, it looks over. And, you know, he would never be somebody who would just walk away mid-season. But if this is not the last knockings of Tom Brady, I'll be astonished. And I saw an amazing tweet that said there was a photo of him sort of looking sort of very harsh and gaunt, really, in the locker room afterwards at the lectern. And it said, Tom Brady looks like Mark Wahlberg playing Tom Brady in a movie about the Super Bowl being taken over by terrorists. Which I thought was fantastic and kind of just sums everything up. But he just, but everything is, the running game isn't working. I know there's been lots of injuries at receiver. Chris Godwin is struggling to come back. Mike Evans has obviously served the suspension, has been injured. He's obviously missing Rob Gronkowski. The offensive line is an absolute mess, and we knew it would be as soon as guys like Ali Marpet retired and the injury issues that they've had up front, Ryan Jensen tearing his ACL and all those sorts of things. You know, that is... Those have been major issues. But the
book on it pre-season was, yes, he's had those injuries, but he's had worse offensive lines before, and he's managed to coach them up, and they've figured it out, and they've raised it up.
Father Time is undefeated.
Chris Godwin hasn't looked like Chris Godwin yet this season. And Mike Evans did drop an absolute dolly, but he still has a very good receiving call there.
A phenomenal player, yeah.
And so... You know, I he has to take a huge amount of this on his shoulders, as much as he wants to throw around, you know, Microsoft Surface tablets, and as much as he wants to scream at people on the sideline. Yeah, it does feel like this is the last throws, and it's a genuine shame. As much as like last year, he wouldn't have been going out on the Super Bowl that he would have been a year before. At least he was going out on a playoff appearance, and they still played well and everything else. Even for somebody who has become completely unenamored with the Brady experience over the past certainly 10 years with his second thing, you recognize his brilliance, you recognize his greatness, and you'd rather he went out on top. If they have a losing season this season, which is absolutely a possibility in Tampa Bay, and then he just kind of limps off into the sunset, it's a shame that that's the way he's going to go out, but it is looking increasingly like that could be the way that he goes out. We had a couple of questions off Twitter, which I'm just going to get to just in case I have to. So Lee, by the way, is just posting in the comments going, ha, 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 Pats. I think we all really feel like that. Let's be honest.
We all definitely feel like that.
Yes, we do.
Brad asks, will the Broncos get back to winning ways this weekend? I have to say, as much as the Jags are 2-5, and that feels like a very that's obviously what the Broncos are as well, and that very much feels like a Jacksonville type record, I saw enough in that Giants game, the late drive where they came within, you know, it was like a Titans Rams Super Bowl ending type tackle on the half yard line that stopped, prevented them from getting in and winning that game. Lawrence looked sturdier than he had done in previous weeks. There weren't anywhere near as many overthrows. There were still a couple, but he overall looked more consistent. He was facing a better defense than he's faced in a lot of other weeks. And I feel like Jacksonville are kind of due one. And with the way that Denver have played in recent weeks, even if they get Russell Wilson back, and even though their defense is still very good, and it is a very good unit, there is a reason that that second half last week started with 8-3 and outs, and it wasn't just because it was Brett Rypien and Zach Wilson under center. I don't know. I kind of like Jacksonville at Wembley this weekend, Simon.
Yeah, I do 100%. I mean, we talked about this on TalkSport on Sunday night, Will, in terms of Trevor Lawrence, and, you know, you look around the league, actually, and you look at some of these younger quarterbacks. Joe Burrow obviously had struggles at the start of the season, obviously missed some time in training camp, had the appendix out. Justin Herbert's been really spotty this season. We talked about Mac Jones earlier on. Trevor Lawrence really hasn't come to the party yet, really as a pro. And you were hoping that with Doug Peterson this season, that the increase in talent around and Travis Etienne coming back, the offensive line getting an injection of talent, it hasn't really happened. And I'm worried for him, but I do think that this is a perfect opportunity to get a win on the board, to be out of the spotlight a little bit in London in terms of just that kind of whole... I think the game's only on ESPN Plus as well, so I'm not sold that everybody's even seeing it in the States. So I think it's a good opportunity for him just to sort of you know, calm down a little bit and go back to what he's been really good at. Because on Sunday, he wasn't even the best Clemson player on the field. That was Dexter Lawrence of the Giants. So I am concerned about Lawrence, but I do think this is even a comfortable Jacksonville victory, actually. It will be interesting to see as well what happens with Denver. A lot of talk about Jerry Jeudy potentially getting traded and some you know, you wonder what's going on with the Broncos there. And, I mean, we could do a whole podcast just on Nathaniel Hackett. So, yeah. Bless you, Will.
cough rather than sneeze, but I appreciate it. There was also a question on the Cowboys potentially going for a corner prior to the trade deadline. This is after a feared Liz Frank injury to Jordan Lewis, who's been very good this year in, you know, a defense which very clearly has a couple of absolute superstars on it. You know, the stats around Micah Parsons, seventh sack of the season, level with Nick Bosa at the top of the sack records, fifth career forced fumble. Trayvon Diggs registered his third interception of the year. It means Parsons recorded 20 sacks in 23 career games, which is level with Dwight Freeney, Sean Merriman, Von Miller. Only Reggie White and Joey Bosa got to that number quicker. And from an interception perspective, you're talking about, you know, only Everson Walls has more interceptions in as many career games. So I kind of feel like they may well just try and ride the stars. I don't think that they're going to go out and spend big. I don't think there's many obvious...
I think a couple of names worth watching would probably be Dante Jackson in Carolina and Stephon Gilmore in Indianapolis. That just wouldn't surprise me if either of those got moved. And you could see Dallas certainly at Gilmore. And you just, you know, you flip across the division, you look at Darius Slay and James Bradbury.
Gilmore feels very Jerry Jones, to be clear. That feels like the sort of thing he would do. Yeah,
that was exactly what I was going to say. That, you know, Bradbury and Slay seem like a perfect combo in Philadelphia, and I'm not sold there's a more perfect cornerback for Jerry Jones than someone like Stephon Gilmore, who just brings obviously a high level of talent, but also just huge experience to that position, and can offer a bit more solidity alongside Trayvon Diggs, who remains a little bit boom or bust.
And when you've got the specter of Sean Payton hanging over Mike McCarthy, and the fact that the NFC, other than the Eagles, are maybe the Giants, but other than the Eagles, the NFC is pretty much wide open. Mike McCarthy will be thinking, right, this is a chance for me to take Dallas deep into the playoffs.
I'm Sean Payton, I'm not going to Dallas. I just want to put that out there. I'm going to go to Detroit. What an opportunity.
If they end up losing enough games to get one of those callbacks, I agree.
Get Bryce Young in the draft and you bring in Sean Payton, and oh my goodness, look out. Jameson Williams. They've got the best offensive line in the league. That defense is young and hungry and getting better and better. I just, if I'm Sean Payton, Dallas. Yeah.
There's a little bit of me that thinks if Dak Prescott went back healthy, we've only seen him twice this year and he's been bad in both games and got injured in one of them. Let's not forget he got injured late in the fourth quarter of that game. So we've seen basically two full games. But you can look at last week and say coming back, rust, injury, et cetera, et cetera. If he figures it out, there is an argument that there is enough talent in Dallas with the talent on defense already to say, yes, that is a Super Bowl worthy team. It just needs the coaching. That could be temptation, but I think that they'd have to figure themselves out on offense before the end of the year for him to be Ollie, bought into that, if you know what I mean.
What do you think about this? Because I think it would be pretty harsh on Dan Quinn not to get that job. And I think if you don't give Dan Quinn the head coaching job in Dallas, you lose him as a defensive coordinator. And I think that that's not what you want to do, given how fantastically he's turned that defense around.
But is that part of Jerry Jones's mantra? I know he's a big fan of Kellen Moore, and maybe he would be the next cab off the rank. Dan Quinn...
Yeah, not for me, Clive.
No, not for me either. So I think Dan Quinn... Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't get the Dallas job, if it comes up, you never know what's going to happen with Mike McCarthy. But if he doesn't get the Dallas job, he's off, obviously off somewhere.
It should already be his job, just to be clear. They should have given it to him this offseason, not wait until next year. Mike McCarthy didn't do anything to justify staying in that job this year, particularly. We've looked forward to quite a few elements of this coming weekend that we're excited about, but let's just take a quick look to week eight and just either pick out a game or something that you're excited to see. We've got on the radio station for which I also work, we have four games back to back to back this weekend and to back to do it properly. So we've got the Wembley game, then we've got Jets Patriots, 49ers Rams, Packers Bills, which by the way, Ollie, oof. Going to Buffalo this weekend. Oof. Those feel like four super significant games for the teams involved. So I'm just excited for everything on Sunday. But Ollie, what are you looking at on this Sunday slate and getting hyped about?
Well, if I wasn't a Packers fan and the thought of an absolute ass-whipping being put upon us by Josh Allen et al., it would have been that game. I know Aaron Rodgers has said that this is the kind of game that they thrive on. And being underdogs, and that, all right, in hindsight, we can see that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are useless, but they were massive underdogs in that game again against the Bucs earlier on in the season. And the Packers could do something, they won't do anything. So that's not the game that I'm particularly looking forward to. I think they're going to absolutely roll all over us. It's again, and I think it's because of the poorness, the paucity of talent,
the poorness
of good teams in the NFC. It looks like another slightly shaky slate of games again. But I think the Eagles having a week off, getting to watch them again is and seeing if they can back up their early season form is an intriguing one for me.
So many bad teams in the league has just made this slate look pretty ugly again. I mean, I'm just trying to pick out. I mean, Rams 49ers looks like a decent-ish game, but, you know, I think
it looks more than decent-ish. And I'm not just saying this as a 49ers fan. The Rams desperately need to get back on track against a team who have absolutely owned them in the regular season, but have just come off their worst loss in 3 years. And therefore, the Rams might fancy themselves. It's always a good divisional game. Yeah. They've been very tight the last few times they've played. Like, genuinely removing myself as a 49ers fan, I actually fancy the Rams in SoFi this weekend. But I think that's for me, that's the best game neutral-wise on the slate.
My point being, I think, was that it was a 3-3 against a 3-4 team. I think the best game of the weekend actually is Seattle against the Giants. I think Geno Smith is playing like the top three or four MVP candidate. I don't think there's any debate about that whatsoever. And you're playing against a 6-1 New York Giants side. I think that'll be an outstanding game. And it's in Seattle, it's on the road, so the noise, the fans will be fantastic. Beyond that, you look at Jets Patriots would have been all right, I suppose, but Patriots shat the bed last night. Colts Commanders is the Texans Titans.
I have to say, I like Jets Patriots more because of that. I had a feeling that what was going to happen was the Patriots were absolutely going to walk past the Bears, and then this was going to be definitely the end for the Jets. But the Jets open up as slight favourites, and I like. We maybe expect a Belichick reaction, but is that thinking of us about the Belichick-Brady era, where whenever they would suffer a loss, they would go out and just absolutely game plan the hell out of someone the following week and hammer them? Don't know if that's true anymore.
74-86 without Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, which tells its own story. Vikings-Cardinals is kind of, if the Vikings had a proper coach and a decent scheme, would
but
be
quite
But
they're boring, aren't they? The Vikings-Cardinals are really dull. And I mean, Arizona have a dreadful, as you said, dreadful head coach. But at least they've got an interesting-ish quarterback, and they'll have another week of DeAndre Hopkins being able to practice, which makes it. I mean, on paper, that makes that game a bit more interesting because the Vikings are 5-1, but they're maybe the most boring 5-1 team that I've ever seen.
We spent a good 10 minutes of this podcast talking about how the Giants and Jets are 6-1 and 5-2, but it's taken real guts and some lucky moments and some great moments to get there. The Vikings look like an absolute lie at 5-1. They remind me of last year's Cardinals side. I'm not buying it. Barring that brilliant win over the Packers in week one, which now looks less brilliant because of what we've seen from the Packers, I don't get it. They, like you said, that Dolphins game, they win that Dolphins game despite having 11 three and outs. Like, just, I don't, I don't, Vikings fans are famously very, very laid back on social media and don't give you any stick when you have a go at them. They look like an absolute mirage of a team to me. But then they're facing the ultimate mirage in the Arizona Cardinals of recent seasons. So, that could be some bad football.
It's a bad football weekend.
Now, what it means is that people can go and enjoy the game at Wembley, and then they don't have to worry too much. They can just tune into the radio and make their way home, not rush to a bar to get there for the 5 o'clock games. And then they're there in time to watch Red Zone or watch whichever game they want to choose. And that'll flip between that Seattle-New York game and that San Francisco Rams game. So it's fine.
We get to go to bed a bit earlier this week as well, don't we? It's the 12:15, 12:20 late game rather than the 1:15, 1:20. So.
On that week, I always look and think, oh, yeah, I could definitely do Monday Night Football as it finishes at 3:30. I could definitely do Browns-Bengals, good Monday Night Football. Texans-Eagles, less good Thursday Night Football. There we go. Yeah. Gents, it's been fun, unless anyone else has any other thoughts.
So, do the clocks go back? Or are they going forward? They're going back.
Clocks go back on Saturday night and Sunday morning. So they don't go back in America for an extra week.
Another week. Okay.
Yeah, it's that brilliant week where we're that little bit closer to the States. Yeah.
Spring forward.
What a time to be alive.
As our Yankee brethren say.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts other than Ollie just figuring out the calendar according to Harman? Yeah. Brilliant. I'm glad we could bring you this fine service. Otherwise, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening, for your questions and everything. As always, at Gridiron on Twitter, at UK Gridiron on Instagram. We're on TikTok as well. Michael does a fine job of getting all that stuff up. I started today being very mean to Michael, and so I'll finish it by saying, isn't he brilliant? And aren't we all excited to get drunk with him in London again? Because he's definitely drinking this week. He told me 100%. It's going to happen.
You better be.
You can have fun without it, by the way. Always drink responsibly and all that. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. It's all gone wrong at the end here, and I'm all right with it. It's gone on an Ollie Hunter ramble. Thank you so much for listening and watching. From Simon, from Ollie, from myself, this has been The Gridiron Show.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.